Feel like you're stuck in career limbo? Clock in, clock out, repeat. No growth, no new opportunities. It's time to break out and break into tech. With CBT Nuggets, you can start building the IT skills that companies are hiring for right now. We make training fast, simple, and practical. From networking to cybersecurity, you'll get short, easy-to-watch videos and hands-on virtual labs so you can build real-world skills without expensive gear or complicated setups. For just $59 a month, you get unlimited access to our full training library. That includes certifications, skill-based learning, and practice exams, a $100 value included free. Learn anytime, anywhere, and get job ready on your terms. Thousands have used CBT Nuggets to launch new careers, and you can too. Right now, CBT Nuggets is offering a free trial. Easily find the training you need and test it out with no commitment. Start your 7-day free trial now at cbtnuggets.com. Don't wait. A better job is just a few clicks away.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is a very special episode of the show. We're going to be talking about the biggest problems facing the world of movie theaters and exhibition right now. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, we are recording this in early April. I'm not sure exactly when this episode is going to be published, but as we record, CinemaCon just wrapped up, and we've been planning for a little while to use that as a springboard to talk about some of the biggest problems the industry is facing right now. From what I gathered from afar, there weren't many concrete answers provided for the things that we're about to go over. So I guess that's kind of a failure of CinemaCon. But anyway, we'll touch more on that as we go along. So you prepared a whole document that we're going to go through. But I wanted to say two things before we get into that. So the first thing is, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, these issues are going to be familiar to you. I'm looking at this episode as a way for us to kind of do a clear-eyed look at all of these problems in the exhibition space, et cetera, and put them in one place. So if you're a longtime listener who is bored with this stuff, I'm sorry. But if you're a newer listener or somebody who cares about these problems, I'm hoping this will be valuable to you. And the second thing is, I wanted to read an email from Jerry from Omaha, who wrote in, and I think a lot of the points that Jerry raises are going to be good for us to sort of have at the beginning of this episode, because as we go through some of these issues, I think we'll be touching on a lot of the things that Jerry's talking about. So Jerry's a father of four who loves movies, and he said he used to see 120 movies a year in theaters, but things changed during the pandemic. He cites theaters reducing showtimes and the collapse of the release window as being problems. And he says, here's a recent example of how the system fails us, the audience. Despite almost no marketing, I heard about the new Looney Tunes movie the day before its release. That weekend, family obligations kept me from catching it. The following week, I managed to see Novocaine on Monday while it was still in premium formats because regular screens lack upkeep. On Thursday, I prioritized Black Bag, knowing it might vanish despite good reviews and fan reception. The next weekend, my schedule was packed with storm cleanup and kids' sports. When searching for a late night, 8 p.m. or later, screening of Looney Tunes, neither AMC in my area had a single showtime. By its third weekend, the only available slots were before 4 p.m. Could I pay $10 at another theater chain? Sure, but it feels wasteful when I had two unused AMC A-list tickets for the weekend. And if Warner Brothers and Ketchup Entertainment didn't bother marketing it, why should I worry about its financial success? Blaming moviegoers for theatrical failures is like blaming kids for their parents' divorce. Studios should have been cutting out the middlemen for years, just as record labels did in the 2000s. Physical media is nearly extinct. Theaters may follow. Cinephiles don't want this, but we have no leverage to address these industry-wide issues. His email goes on there, and I guess we would probably take issue with the physical media is nearly extinct thing, because I think that's kind of back in, it's not nearly what it was, but I think there's still a booming physical media market out there. But I think Jerry brings up a lot of points that we'll be going through here. So yeah, Ryan, I kind of want to hand this over to you and kind of let you lead the charge on this discussion here.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to touch on a couple of those points, like, I desperately wanted to see that new Looney Tunes movie in theaters. Couldn't get a screen time that worked for me. It was pulled from screens a lot after opening weekend. Like, I sympathize with that entirely. The only thing I would say is we don't maybe have a booming physical media market anymore. There are some great boutique distributors out there. I'd like to shout out Arrow, Shout Factory, as well as their horror label Scream Factory, Criterion. Some of these places are doing great work in the space, but you know, Best Buy doesn't sell physical media anymore. Target pretty much removed it. Like, it's harder and harder to get that stuff. So I do think that that is also a challenge. That having been said, I talked to Ben a little bit ago, and I said, look, we keep talking about all these problems like here and there, and I feel like it would be good to boil some of this stuff down. And I will say this conversation takes on renewed light today. I'm not here to get into a political discussion, but the economy is not looking like it's going to be in good shape right now. A lot of people are looking at their stocks and stuff today in horror. So, I understand there are a lot more economic concerns now, and going to the movies isn't as cheap as it once was. We're going to talk about that. But so we're going to try to cover all of the broad picture right now. And let's just go over some quick data points that point to why theatrical is in trouble, kind of give an idea of the state of things. Over 5,000 theaters in the U.S. have shut down since the pandemic began. I did not realize the screen count was that large of theaters that we've lost since the pandemic began. That doesn't just mean 5,000 independent movie theaters closed. It means like if you had an AMC that had 26 screens and it closed, that's 26 of those 5,000 screens. Mm-hmm. Even after the absolutely massive opening weekend of a Minecraft movie, which was fantastic, which we needed, the domestic box office is still trailing roughly 5% behind 2024, which, mind you, was the year that we were recovering from the SAG-AFTRA and WGA strikes. So we're even further behind 2023, which was still quite a bit behind pre-pandemic levels of domestic box office, even if we don't account for inflation. So that's just kind of a very rough overview of what that looks like. There's also a much larger gap right now between the top movies on a given weekend or at the end of a year. If you look at global box office versus everything else, that gap has widened quite a bit. So whereas on a weekend like this where, yes, you had a Minecraft movie making $163 million, the number two movie on the charts made just over seven. So you don't have those $20 to $30 million movies that often sort of coming in below the number one movie. That gap is getting bigger. And then the other startling thing that people, you know, to just show how much more streaming has taken over, I wrote about this a little bit ago. We didn't talk about this on the podcast, but the Netflix alone generated more revenue in 2024 than the entirety of the global box office, not the domestic box office, the global box office. And that is to say nothing of Peacock, Max, Paramount Plus, any other streaming service you want to mention. That's just Netflix. So that's kind of where, to give everyone a rough idea of where things stand. Obviously, that opens up a lot of other conversation, but those are just some rough data points to get at. Things are changing, some of it not for the better, some of it that will have larger, big industry ramifications, and I think mostly because what we've seen recently is that to function, the business still really needs the box office to operate. Streaming alone isn't really going to work. It's kind of just a vacuum in some ways, which is why a lot of studios are abandoning streaming only releases, like direct to streaming releases. Not entirely, but for the most part, a lot more of these movies are going to theaters again, because that helps generate the conversation. It helps generate some revenue and all these things. So, that's kind of an overview of what we're looking at. So I don't know if you have anything before we dig in a little deeper here, Ben, but.
Well, no, I think that's all good context to have. And I think the way you've laid this out is a smart way for us to go through and talk about what we're going to talk about on this episode, which is problems for theaters, problems for studios, problems for moviegoers, and then maybe potential solutions that could maybe help everyone involved. I guess let's just get right into problems for theaters. As it stands right now, Ryan, what do you think some of the biggest problems for movie theaters are?
So as Ben mentioned up top, like, you know, some of these don't have like clear definitive answers. We are not experts in the sense that we're not within the industry itself. We report on it. We talk about it. So we're going to do the best we can here to sort of surmise the problems as we see them, as we've understood them. So let's start with people are not going to the movies as often as they were before the pandemic. That is full stop. Absolutely true. If you look at the graph of, you know, domestic box office, it goes up, up, up for the most part with little dips until we peaked in 2018 with $11.89 billion domestically. Dropped a little bit in 2019 to $11.3 billion, and then something happened in 2020, where pretty much like there was virtually no domestic box office beyond February. And as of right now, our peak after that point was $8.91 billion in 2023. So we have yet to get anywhere near you know, pre-pandemic levels of movie going again. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that people are going to the movies less frequently. And, you know, the only very specific types of movies are making that money. So, Ben, what do you want me to go point by point here? Do you want me to go through the whole list and then we can talk about it? Or
I have something to say about the stat that you just mentioned, which is I think we should distinguish between the box office totals and then the actually like the number of people who were going to see movies in theaters, because that was going down before the pandemic even started. I remember us talking about how the pandemic just exacerbated trends that were already happening on that front. So while the overall box office may have been going steadily up with maybe a little bit of a dip here and there, that's because the theaters increased prices and things like that, right? Like, so the actual number of human beings who walked into a theater and paid for a movie ticket has been going down for, or had been going down for years before the pandemic even started. So I just wanted to make that delineation in case people had some questions about that.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true. And then, like, even if you look at, like, if people have done those lists of, like, what's the highest grossing movie of all time, if you adjust for inflation, like, it, you know, Gone with the Wind is still, you know, far and away. And a lot of that also has to do with, you know, if you start going far enough back, well, okay, there was no competition for eyeballs. There was two movies in theaters and they stayed in theaters for a year. And, you know, it gets complicated when you start taking the time. But yes, that is absolutely true. So, and part of that has to do with the rise of, like, premium formats, like an IMAX ticket is much more expensive than a regular ticket and all that stuff. So, but Ben is correct. That is a good distinction to make, and it's an important one. Another one to make is that studios are not releasing nearly as many movies as they used to per year. And one of the common things you'll hear, I don't want to cite specific examples, but you can Google any number of articles where people who run theater chains will essentially beg studios to release more theater. Like I'm going to share a quote here in a second, but basically the idea is theater owners want more quantity rather than like one big hit. So just to give an example, in 2019, according to Box Office Mojo, there were 910 releases that counted toward the domestic box office total that year. In 2023, that number was 592. In 2024, that number was 675. So that number is still expected to increase this year. Like I think I saw we're going to get closer to 700 this year, but that's still quite a bit below, you know, what we were at before. So a lot of theater owners I've heard talk about just like, it's a quantity issue. Like it literally just boils down to just give us more things, you know, and, so Variety did this article recently about, you know, they interviewed five different theater owners on ways to bring audiences back to theaters. And one of them was asked, you know, how important are tentpoles to your business? Tentpoles meaning like blockbuster big movies. They said they're important, but quantity is more important. I'll take six movies that are doing reasonably over a giant movie that creates a vacuum. More is better. And we'll get more into that vacuum here in a minute. But that is an enormously important point to make, and it's one I'm going to come back to. So the other thing is, which I've talked a lot about on this podcast, so I won't drone on about it, shorter theatrical windows. Before the pandemic, 45 days was the bare minimum for a movie that wasn't like a very tiny release to be in theaters before it went to, say, VOD or DVD or whatever. 60 days was more common. Now you're very lucky to see 30 days before a movie is on VOD. So that's a big thing.
Yeah, that was one of the few things that I did see come out of CinemaCon news-wise, was that there was a big push from a few of the studios to try to convince everyone there that, hey, we should adopt a 45-day window. And evidently, a couple people said, like, hey, yeah, we should do this. And then not every studio is on board with that. So nothing ultimately happened from it. But that was one of the ideas that was presented, that was put forth at CinemaCon, like, hey, maybe we can actually use this as a way to make an industry-wide decision here. And it just kind of stumbled and never went anywhere because different studios are using different strategies, as we've talked about. And I heard an interview with, I think it was like a distribution guy at Universal recently, where he was talking about the money that they make from premium video on demand, the $20 rentals that go up, you know, X number of days after a movie debuts in theaters, that money goes right back into their production slate. That's not
necessarily what he said.
Well, you don't believe him?
Well, Okay, so you're listening. So I was going to bring this up, but you're listening. We mentioned a few times there's The Town, a very good podcast that and that was from CinemaCon, where one of the Universal's chief distribution officer was talking about this with it was also the CEO of Regal was on that panel, and the CEO of Regal was arguing in favor of increasing those, you know, the 45-day window. And then the Universal guy was pushing back on that, like, well, we're doing flexible windowing, where he's like, oh, you know, it just depends. And what he's basically saying, look, we're doing what's best for us, clearly. And, you know, he argued, yeah, we take that money and put it right back into, I'm sure you do. Like, of course, you don't take any of that profit. And, you know, it's like, I'm not saying that that's absolutely untrue, but it feels a little bit disingenuous for me to, for him to say, like, every penny of that VOD money goes right into the slate. I don't know about that.
Well, when you look at the number of movies that Universal releases compared to somebody like Paramount or even Warner Brothers, I think that number, I think that kind of bears out, right? I think Universal is kind of like an industry leader right now. And so if it was any other movie studio head or distribution person saying that from a different studio, I might look at that askance. But I think Universal seems to be putting their money where their mouth is in that front. And we don't have to like drill down on this much further. I just wanted to mention that as like I guess another data point in this conversation, but yeah.
No, and it's true. And I do say Universal because, you know, Focus Features falls under Universal's purview, and Focus is still releasing like adult focused movies in theaters, even if they don't necessarily work out financially, like at the box office, because VOD can help prop those up. And, you know, but it just felt like the argument between those two people was exactly the argument you and I are going to kind of have today, is that like, there's no definitive answer here. And both sides both have arguments for why their reasoning is correct. And then one of the other really big things that, you know, is perceived quality issues, is that, you know, projection, you know, we see videos and stuff all the time, rude audience members, people recording movie screens on opening night. And I've got my own horror story from last year of, you know, a bad theatrical experience. So like these are reasons people go, you know, for a theater needs to overcome that to be able to convince people that it's worth paying money to come to our you know, place. And then theaters obviously have, the last point here is major revenue issues in the aftermath of the pandemic. AMC has over, last time I checked, well over $5 billion in debt. Regal Cinemas, parent company, went through bankruptcy about a year and a half ago. You know, the Alamo Drafthouse was bought by Sony Pictures because it made more sense for Sony to own it than it was to be an independent entity. You know, so there's serious revenue issues for these theater chains that also need to somehow also invest in making that theatrical experience more desirable for people. So it, you know, those are the main issues as I see them for theaters specifically. We'll get into the studios more here in a minute.
Yeah. Just in terms of potential, well, I guess this is jumping ahead to the solutions, but I'll just mention that because this already was announced, this is not us speculating about what they should do. I got a press release not too long ago that says Dolby Cinemas has announced 40 more Dolby Cinemas at AMC theaters will be built in the coming years, which is like a nearly 25% increase in Dolby locations in the United States, which is a way for them to potentially fix the quality issues there just in terms of the projection and things like that. They still have a lot of work to do when it comes to addressing rude audience members and stuff like that. But just in terms of, increasing the quality, announcements like that, you know, this is only going to be 40 theaters overall. So it's not like a one size fits all fix or anything, but it's going in the right direction. You know, like that, I want to see more of that kind of thing where theater chains are actively addressing the quality issues that you just mentioned.
Yeah. We also, for anyone that's curious, we had a interview with the head of Dolby Cinema last year that we put up and kind of explained like, you know, what is Dolby compared to IMAX and sort of like, but yeah, Dolby Cinema is just another premium format that has taken, you know, people, that's one of the things we will see consistently, is that people want to, when they are willing to pay, they're actually willing to pay more for the experience now, which is sort of interesting. And that's one of those things. So I don't know, Ben, do you have anything else like based on the theater stuff before we move on to the problems, perceived issues for the studios, like any of the stuff that we kind of talked about there? And
I think those are the big ones. I mean, this is a problem that everyone seems to be affected by, but I saw a study that came out a couple of weeks ago that indicates that 56% of Gen Z and 43% of millennials that participated in the survey find social media content more relevant than traditional TV shows and movies, which is just kind of a brutal statistic. And that indicates that there's just a lack of interest in the act of movie going. So that's definitely a problem for theaters. You know, I don't really know exactly what the solution is there, as will probably be the case for most of the issues that we're talking about. But that's just another thing that they're having to contend with.
Well, and that's an enormous thing too, right? Like you look at like the rise of like the YouTuber, right? And the generation below us is completely into, you know, YouTube and that type of programming as opposed to like a studio made TV show or movie. And I'm on full disclosure, if I'm not watching a movie rather than watching TV, a lot of the time I am watching YouTube. So you know, I sort of fall into that as well.
Although I guess maybe a positive of that is the success of the Minecraft movie means that there are still ways to get those younger crowds to come out in huge fashion, you know? So it's not necessarily a lost cause or anything. It's just maybe a matter of strategy or something.
Well, no, you absolutely have to cater to, I wrote a big thing for us about the Minecraft box office and why that did well. And a big part of it is the Five Nights at Freddy's thing. You're catering to a Gen Z specific thing rather than trying to make Gen Z think Transformers is cool. You know, it shouldn't be things that are 40 years old that we liked. It's, you got to cater to them. And, you know, that's another conversation entirely, but that is a part of it for sure. So yeah, so we talked about the theater side, but okay, this is a symbiotic relationship. So what are the issues that the studios are experiencing? Well, there is a lot of uncertainty over what movies will and will not hit. Things that used to seem like slam dunks just aren't getting the job done like they used to. And, you know, then you have stuff like this weekend, like a Minecraft movie that popped off. Like, and I'm not even saying that these things need to be billion-dollar hits, but the fact that, you know, Captain America Brave New World could barely limp to 400 million worldwide, or that Snow White is going to struggle to get past $200 million worldwide at this point is astonishing. You know, and there's many, many more examples. And I think the first thing people would say there is like, those weren't very good movies. And that's okay. I'm not here to have that conversation. But the point is that, you know, in the pandemic era, it is very uncertain what will and will not hit. And that makes it tough to invest in a slate. The other thing is that you and I have talked a lot is that studios now have this desire to keep theatrical windows short in the interest of maximizing VOD revenue, which can be massive. You know, we've all seen the reports about Wicked making over $100 million in PVOD. You know, and studios keep a lot more of that PVOD money than they do, you know, ticket sale money out of the gate at the box office. So, you know, there is a strong desire to keep that business alive. And then the other thing is because the pandemic drove streaming to, you know, every studio in Hollywood, for the most part, save for like Sony and a couple of others, is deeply invested in a streaming service. So studios now have this need to balance streaming with box office. How do you service your streamer and service that audience while also trying to maintain a healthy box office business? Those two things can be in conflict at times. And then at this end, kind of getting to that same point, studios are also trying to make up lost revenue from other streams that are dying right now. You had the CW get sold to a company called Nexstar because Nexstar is just going to fill it with unscripted programming and make it cheap. And Warner Brothers and Paramount were tired of losing money on it. Cable is drying up. And we wrote not that long ago on the site that for the first time ever, cable TV usage dropped below 50%. In 2023. And, you know, that just shows that streaming is taking over, right? You know, and then you have, you know, physical media isn't what it once was. So DVD can't be there to save your movie on the back end. They got to find a way to make up those lost revenue streams. And for now, VOD is the best thing they have. Another problem, which I've been barking about for 4 years and running is, you know, studios are trying to manage budgets as costs increase. We have seen the $200 million blockbuster no longer become an anomaly and, you know, more of an expected thing. Like, I was pleasantly surprised to see that the Minecraft movie had a $150 million budget. I should frankly not be surprised that a blockbuster movie has a $150 million budget. That should be closer to the normal, but it isn't a lot of the time. And then, you know, another enormous issue, which this one I sympathize with because I don't really know what the answer is at all, is, you know, getting your movie in front of the right people as attention spans are divided between a million other things. Studios have to figure out, okay, if we're marketing a movie, we have to deal with all these different social media platforms, not just one. We have to deal with trying TV ads and trying to get trailers in front of the movies that people are seeing. And Ben, I don't know about you, but I can't tell you how many times I talk about a movie or my friend sees a movie on streaming and they're like, oh, when did this come out? I didn't hear anything about this. And yet you and I are like, that movie was, I heard so much about that movie, you know, and we were yelling about this movie and trying to get people to see it and just, you know, and it is an enormous problem. So, you know, that's one of the biggest ones, I think.
Yeah, that's really, really tough. And I mean, you said it, but I totally sympathize with anybody in a studio marketing department right now. Like, I may complain and whine about the way trailers are cut or something, but sometimes you just got to do whatever you can to stand out. So it's tough to blame these folks for maybe egregious trailer moments or things like that, maybe being potentially spoiled or something. Like, it just seems harder than it's ever been on that front. So yeah, that's pretty rough. All right, let's take a quick break, Ryan, then we'll come back and get into what some problems are for moviegoers these days. All right, so what do you think are the biggest problems facing moviegoers in 2025?
All right, so yeah, looking again, this is not just a studio issue. This is not just a theater issue. This is comes down to people, right? And like, I don't tend to be like to blame the consumer. That's not usually the way that I like to be. So I'm certainly not going to do that here. And especially at a point when, you know, of broad economic uncertainty. So to start off, tickets can be pretty damn expensive for a movie. Things like, you know, AMC Stubbs A-List, as you mentioned, and a lot of theaters have these programs now where you can do like a monthly thing. I use the Alamo Drafthouse one out here in Austin. It is wonderful. I would never be able to go to the movies as often as I do without those programs. You know, so that, but yeah, if you're just walking around New York City and you want to go see a movie, that is a shockingly expensive thing now. The theatrical experience is another thing. It's something I talk about as a cherished thing, but what that theatrical experience is for a lot of people isn't always great. I think I shared a story on this podcast last year about going to a Regal Cinema near me for the first time in a while and realizing that, you know, the projection was bad, the seats were old and bad, and it was kind of it was really rough to sort of get a bit of a dose of reality there to realize that's most people's average trip to a theater. So, you know, that's something to be certain. And then like we sort of just talked about this, but people might not even be aware of movies that they actually want to see. That's a marketing issue. There's all kinds of reasons, but like, even if you are the target audience member for a thing, it might not have its way to reach you just because a smaller movie tends to have a limited marketing budget. And how are you reaching people? It's complicated. We talk about this one all the time, but it's true. It is just often easier nowadays for people to stay at home and wait to stream something, especially with the quality of TVs now, sound systems, everything. It's just, you know, I got a 65-inch 4K TV for $300 and it looks great. That's kind of tough to beat. And then, yeah, as I just mentioned, the economy right now is a gigantic factor. People are trying to save money right now. There's a lot of uncertainty. So, and it has been that way. You know, the pandemic was obviously a time of enormous uncertainty and then coming out of that. So, yeah, it's not as easy for people to just justify disposable income for a movie when they can watch it at home. There is also this one I sort of take issue with, but it is true that it's a thing that I hear a lot. There is a perceived quality issue with movies. People, I'm sure you see all the time, Ben, on Twitter, wherever you're at, oh, Hollywood sucks. They don't make anything original. Everything sucks. There's nothing good. Now, maybe it's just that the good things aren't reaching those people, whatever, but there is definitely a perceived quality issue for a lot of general moviegoers. Am I exaggerating that one? Or because I feel like that's a real thing.
No, that's a real thing. And it bums me out because there are movies. I'm just looking at like the films that have come out, the American movies that have come out so far this year. I was just looking back through January and like One of Them Days was a great movie that did not really have a huge, robust marketing campaign. And Steven Soderbergh's Presence, another one, like it's a pretty small film, but I'm sure people saw a billion trailers for Universal's Wolfman, which like I didn't even bother seeing because I heard it was so bad, you know? So I think there is, I think the word you use, perceived quality issue, is very important there, because I think it directly correlates with the marketing that people are being fed and seeing on their social platforms or whatever. And it all probably has to do with budget and how much you can push certain movies to certain people. But yeah, there are tons of smaller films that have come out this year that have been fantastic. And I just feel like people don't know about them. And then they are blanketed with trailers for something like Love Hurts, which is one of the worst mainstream American studio movies I've seen in a decade. And so when all you're seeing as a potential moviegoer is the trailer for Wolfman and the trailer for Love Hurts, and you hear a headline about reviews, or you hear from your friends who went and saw those movies and they say that it's terrible, then what are you supposed to think? You know, I empathize with viewers on that front as well.
I do too. And because it's impossible, right? Like I agree. Presence is a really good movie. I really liked Presence, but a movie like that has no marketing budget, you know? So it's like, I don't know how you get that in front of people. And yeah, it is tough. This last one I'll talk about, and then I'm kind of going to immediately present like a possible solution, because this was something that sort of came up when I was at South By this year. But too many other things are competing with movies for people's attention. Movies are no longer the automatic forefront of the cultural conversation. There is any number of streaming services with any number of high quality TV shows at any given time. There is TikTok, there is YouTube, there is video games, the list goes on and on and on and on and on of these things that are competing for movies' attention now. It's no longer just the automatic thing. Hell, you and I are making a podcast right now in which we are asking people for time and attention. You know, that is just how this goes. So part of what theaters are doing to combat that now is that theaters are kind of just part of the experience. I went to this panel at South by Southwest, and it was several heads of smaller regional theater chains sort of came to talk about what they're doing. And it basically what more of them are doing is they're moving toward becoming like mixed entertainment centers where they have, you know, food and you can offer dinner and you get alcohol. And then like, they're also attached to an arcade and a bowling alley, and in some cases axe throwing. And it's about getting this people to spend more time there and more money doing other things rather than strictly being a movie theater. And you know, that's a diversified business. There's other money to be made there. I see the appeal of that. Also, as a moviegoer, I see problems with that. We can get into that more in a second if you want. But, you know, that's kind of what these businesses are having to do, is diversify, because they can't rely on movies alone to carry the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there was talk at one point, I remember this was a few years ago, about movie theaters basically creating like cordoned off sections in the lobby for VR experiences and stuff. And I think that ship has mostly sailed, but it's kind of like indicative of the let's grasp at straws, let's come up, you know, there's no such thing as a bad idea kind of approach to let's try to figure out anything we can to get people into the theater and maybe stay there for longer than just the length of a movie, and actually turn this into a true third space, you know, a place that people can go that isn't home or work or school, and have it be the kind of communal center that maybe it once was back in the heydays of malls and things like that. So I guess, should we transition now into potential solutions here?
Yeah. I think that the only thing I would say, just real quick as an anecdote for me, is that last year, me and my fiance desperately wanted to go see Longlegs. She's a big horror fan, and so am I. And that night that we had free, the only, are you familiar with Evo, Ben? Do you know what Evo is? It was like, you know, they have like,
no, I don't think so.
Okay. So Evo is like an entertainment center type place where like, it's sort of like a Dave and Buster's type thing where they have, you know, an arcade, and then they have, you know, other stuff in there as well. And they also tend to have a movie theater. So we went like, well, okay, it was a Tuesday and they had like $5 movie tickets. So we're like, oh, okay, well, we'll just go, because we had gone to this Evo for an early screening of Wonka and it was actually a really nice theater. So we're like, okay, well, we'll go catch Longlegs there. And packed theater, it looked like what happened is a bunch of parents bought a bunch of rowdy teenagers tickets for like two full rows worth of the theater. And they were just running up and down the aisles, switching seats, texting, yelling. Like, it was unbelievable. Like, me and two other people literally had to yell shut up to them at various points in the theater. I had to go to the lobby to get the manager. Like, it was that kind of thing. And so that's the sort of like, because these people aren't there for, they're not there for the theatrical experience. They're there because a movie's part of their afternoon and they're leaving its unattended kids. I'm not saying that's always the situation, but I'm saying, you know, that is obviously happening sometimes and not ideal. So that's kind of sort of the give and take. I think these theaters are having to play the game with of the younger generation isn't just going to sit there for 2 hours quietly, you know? So, but yeah, so some of the, I guess what I'm getting at there before we get into the solutions thing is that some of these solutions might also come with other problems, but it's about finding a balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So, I guess let's maybe go one thing at a time here. And before we get into the solutions, let's just say, again, we are not, I do not run a movie studio. Ben does not run a movie studio, or at least that he has not told me about. You know, I don't run a movie theater. I do have tiny bit of experience, working in a movie theater and kind of helping to get, you know, marketing a little bit and realizing how challenging that is even on the smallest level. But, all right. So let's talk about one thing. As I mentioned earlier, Sony Pictures bought the Alamo Drafthouse, and, Tom Rothman, who is the, chairman of Sony Pictures, last year argued that movie ticket prices should be lower. I have a whole article about that and he had a lot to say, but, basically he was saying, look, like, we should be trying to turn this into a volume game. And I think if you look at most theaters around the country, participate in like what they sort of call Discount Tuesday. And every single Tuesday, if you look at graphs of weekly box office, the box office spikes because people know that the tickets are cheaper. So they go. And so I think lowering ticket prices to me, maybe not on Friday and Saturday, like the peak days, but I've sort of argued maybe you extend that discount day thing to like weekdays. But I do think that making things cheaper and if you can get more volume is a decent idea. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about that, Ben?
I don't know, man. I wish I knew more about the economics of that decision because on paper, it sounds fantastic to me. And it's and you mentioned like the graph showing that people just straight up go to the movie theaters more on Tuesdays because they know that the discount is there. I just don't know. I don't know what I don't know to use that phrase. You know what I mean? So like, I'm sure there's somebody out there who has a very valid reason why that doesn't make as much sense as we think it does. I just don't know what that is. So if you do have a response to that, like send us an email because I would love to hear about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be putting that forward if it wasn't something I had heard. Like, again, if Tom Rothman from Sony hadn't said that, I might not have thought about it. And if I didn't see those Tuesday spikes every week, and then also I believe in that same podcast I was talking about, I believe it might have been the Universal chairman who was also saying, yeah, maybe let's do those discount days more. Like it, because I think the thing is that like, and I've seen, I wish I had actual stats in front of me and studies, but for instance, the AMC Stubbs A-List, the Alamo Drafthouse season pass that I have, there is a lot of data to back up that like, okay, because I'm not paying so much for each and every ticket, I am much more likely to buy concessions and things like that. And that's where, as we talk about all the time, theaters tend to make more money from concessions and stuff. So there's like almost a way to make up the revenue and volume there, right? Like you're going to make less from each ticket, but you're going to get more people and those people are going to buy other things. That's sort of the, So I think that's where my understanding of the data. And again, that's why I'm saying probably Friday and Saturday night. No, you got to keep those tickets what they are. You can't be doing discount, you know, but I, and obviously you're not discounting IMAX, but you know, So it's,
and that helps the theaters who benefit from the concession money, right? But that doesn't really help the studios because the studios don't take a cut of the concession stand, as far as I know, but they do take a pretty significant cut of the, they split the percentages of revenues with the individual theaters. So if you lower the movie ticket prices, I think the studios might have something to say about that. But again, as you mentioned, the head of Sony is suggesting this. So like they clearly know something I don't.
I guess the reason I would say that is, like, you know, let's look at, you know, let's try to look at a chart from last week, right? Like, where, okay, you're right. The studios don't get a cut of the concessions, but all right, let's look at last week before Minecraft came out. On Monday, you had a working man made $1.2 million. On Tuesday, a working man made $1.8 million. It was up 46% from the prior day. So the studio's making it up in volume because the tickets are cheaper. You know, so mm-hmm. they're getting $600,000 more dollars worth of box office, you know, in the aggregate. So I think that, to me, that, you know, if you had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you know, discount days, you could theoretically add a fair amount to the box office that way.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, that's, again, that's just all theoretical. But the other thing I think, and we've talked about this one a little bit, is there's absolutely definitely value in continued investment in theater quality and specifically premium format stuff. Dolby Cinema is doing well. Cinemark XD is doing well. 4DX is doing well. IMAX is doing phenomenal. I think the whole point is that you have to have something that you can't have at the helm, and you have to have a reason to make it worth it. There's a reason people were thrilled to pay that money for Oppenheimer or Top Gun Maverick, and they were fighting for IMAX screens. And there's a reason why Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning lost out on tens and millions of revenue because they didn't get those IMAX screens. So, yeah, I think that there's value to that. I personally have, like, some slight concerns with premium format being, like, the go-to and only thing, you know, because then that sort of makes it more expensive, and it also makes it, like, you know, the norm is a more expensive premium experience and a less regular thing. But I see the good and bad side of that one personally. I don't know if you have any thoughts on it, but...
I'm conflicted in the exact same way for the same reason. So I love a premium format experience, but I'm not sure that I want it to be the primary option for people just because of the price, especially considering the economic situation that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, and I do think the one thing, though, and I can say this as a moviegoer with if the Alamo Drafthouse shut down today and I had to start going to other theaters, like, I think Cinemark generally does a good job in my experience with Cinemark, but a lot of the AMCs I go to, a lot of the Regals I go to, the projectors are bad, the screens are bad, the seats are bad. Like I do sympathize with people in that a lot of times those auditoriums are not in great shape. And so I do think your average workaday movie theater has got, I know that it's hard, I know it's expensive, I know all of these things, but you cannot expect people to go with regularity if that quality isn't there. If you're promising the big screen experience, you've got to deliver that experience. So, you know, I know that's tough, but that's the business you're in.
Definitely.
I think the biggest one is, I don't know exactly what the answer is. Studios and theaters have got to find a middle ground on this theatrical windows thing. There is a very clear disagreement between everyone right now. And, you know, I have my thoughts on it. Regular listeners of this podcast probably know what that is. I don't feel like droning it away at this again, because I don't want to be Mr. Unpopular, but it's very clear that the rush to premium VOD and the rush to direct to streaming that was necessitated by the pandemic maybe doesn't suit the current situation 5 years removed. And I think that studios desperately need theaters to survive. And those theater owners are saying, hey, guys, we need these movies in theaters longer. You can't keep taking them directly to VOD. And, you know, because once it goes to premium VOD, you can get a 4K rip of that movie that can be pirated like that. And I do not know how much piracy eats into the box office, but it's got to be a heck of a lot easier for someone to just decide to pirate a movie when you can get a 4K copy of it. You know, so, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've talked an enormous amount about this over the past couple of years. I actually am not certain that I could pin down what your opinion on the VOD thing is if I were asked. So, like, I guess, where do you sort of fall on it with the information you have?
I think it's because I haven't taken as strong a stand as you have, and I find myself swayed by the various arguments that I hear, because at different times, a lot of these different arguments make sense to me. You know, it's just a hard thing. I find it difficult to, like, it was so hard, Ryan, for the theatrical window to get shattered. There were decades of the conversations between theaters and studios about extending or shortening that window, rather, and they just held so firm, and there was no way that it was going to happen. And it took literally a world-altering event for that to change. And I just don't know what is going to get everybody on the same page again, what is going to force their hand to shorten those windows, especially with these individual studios having different strategies and benefiting in different ways from the ways that they are optimizing their different VOD approaches and things like that. You know, it's just like, I can't imagine a scenario where all of them say of their own accord, yeah, you know what, let's agree on this. Let's just, because all of their approaches seem so different to me, you know? So I just can't, I don't know if I'm like putting a flag in the ground because I just don't know what the future is going to look like on this one.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I just think that, and I think the studios, like if you were to ask a lot of the studios, I bet they would want a 60 day, but I think they're willing to say 45 is more realistic, you know? And yeah. So I don't know. I mean, that gets tricky, but so then another one that I would point out, and then I think that this, you know, bears this one's tough to argue against, is that I would say you should continue to flood the movie theaters with different types of movies, even if there are losses in the short term. And I sort of talked about this a little bit recently with Death of a Unicorn, and we talked about this where, like, that's the type of movie that probably should exist. It's a reasonably budgeted original movie that had an audience-friendly thing, good cast, whatever. It didn't work out really in the short term at the box office, but people aren't ever going to return to theaters if you just keep going, ah, forget it, we won't do that again because people didn't show up. You got to just keep putting movies in theaters, more movies, try to build those habits back up. And, like, there isn't always data for these things, right? Like, because what I would argue is that, okay, someone maybe goes and sees Black Bag, a movie that is not going to be an outright theatrical success. But then they're like, oh yeah, that was awesome. I remember, I like going to the movies. And then they're maybe more inclined, like the next time something comes out that's a little original or interesting, they're like, hey, do you want to go see this? You know, it sort of builds the habit back up and you can sort of get people to, and I think that, like, for example, Top Gun Maverick, I would wager that people, that experience was so good that it probably gave people, they probably gave a couple of other movies a shot after that just because they liked that experience enough that they probably went back. And I think if you look at, like, the overall, you know, the way that, like, 2023 finished up at the box office versus 2022, that might be true. But yeah, so I just think that you can't pull back. You can't release less movies. You can't just keep doing franchise stuff only. You have to continue to make original stuff, different genres, put rom-coms in theaters. Don't just put them on Netflix. Diversify a slate and put them in theaters. I think that one is, look, people that have an argument against that one, I'm happy to hear you. I imagine it's hard to argue against. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Ben, but.
I mean, on paper, that all sounds great to me. It's just tough to imagine the person who is greenlighting an iffy concept or something that doesn't have a clear comp that has been super successful in the past. And this dovetails into the problem for the studios that you were talking about earlier, the uncertainty regarding what movies will hit and what won't. The idea of, like, well, we'll just make this movie because it's good to have different types of movies out there. Even if previous movies kind of like this haven't performed super well, let's take the altruistic approach and just do this because we're supposed to and because it's healthy for the box office overall. No individual person who is in a position where their job is probably constantly under threat is going to make that decision of their own accord. So I sympathize with that person as much as I, again, kind of complain about some of these broader issues that we're talking about. As you said earlier, it comes down to people, and you're talking about moviegoers, but it also comes down to the people who are making these decisions on the studio side. And I sympathize with people who are making those types of decisions that are pretty tough. And it makes me respect the folks who make those decisions anyway, even more. So that, I guess that's what I have to say about that.
I agree, but I will say that in cases, altruism can pay off, where, like, you know, rom-coms were, like, exclusively a Netflix thing for a little bit, and then you have movies like The Lost City or Ticket to Paradise blow up in theaters. They make a ton of money. And, you know, like, the same thing, like, Long Legs on paper is a tough sell, but that, you know, blows up. Like, and so I think that what's fortune favors the bold, right? Like, you know, it can go that way. So, and then this all kind of dovetails into one of the final points I think we need to make here is that studio, theaters, people, everyone, don't make panicked short-term decisions with long-term effects. And I think that that's happened a lot in that, like, okay, theaters shut down in 2020 and Hollywood panicked, rightfully so. I get it. There was no way of knowing if theaters were ever going to open again. So, you know, everyone doubled, tripled, quadrupled down on streaming and VOD and all these things. You know, 5 years ago this week, Trolls World Tour became the first premium video on demand movie that was intended to be a brand new theatrical release. Now, when the pandemic first struck, Universal and other studios released recent theatrical movies on demand to make up revenue, but Trolls World Tour was intended to be a theatrical release. It was the first one that went premium video on demand, made a ton of money, and there was no looking back. And I would argue that making that a cornerstone of the business was a short-term decision that had long-term effects. And, you know, continuing to invest in that is having adverse effects in some of these other things. So I just would implore studios and decision makers, yes, in the short term, some of these things look good on paper and they're going to help in your quarterly earnings report. But I'm looking at the quarterly earnings report 5 years from now, you know, and like, what happens if AMC Theaters doesn't exist? How does that help you? You know, and so this is a symbiotic relationship. As I said, these studios and theaters really need each other. And I just don't know what the movie business looks like without a healthy theatrical marketplace. I think studios know that, but I think what they want to do is essentially have them on an IV drip and keep them just alive enough to service their needs so that they can squeeze every bit of profit out of VOD and stuff. And, you know, I get that they're servicing their business, but I think they need to sort of offer a little bit more in the short term to let those businesses thrive and not just survive.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, I would love to keep this conversation going, and hopefully folks have stuck with us, and hopefully this has been valuable to our listeners. And I would just encourage people to write us emails if you have any responses to any of the things that we said, if you work for a movie theater chain or a movie studio and take issue with any of the way that we've presented any of this information, like shoot us an email. I would love to, again, keep this conversation going. And this is something that we're going to be talking about for a long time because, like we said, these problems don't have clear solutions. So we're still going to be hashing this stuff out. But I think it was helpful, even if no one listens to this, Ryan, it was just you and me. I think it was helpful for us to kind of put all this stuff in one place and kind of get a clear picture of where we stand right now in 2025, 5 years after the entire world changed, you know? So, yeah, hopefully our listeners got something out of this. But any closing thoughts, Ryan?
There was just one interesting tidbit I found out in researching for this, and that the head of Neon, the studio between Anora and Parasite and all these other movies, I didn't know he was, they were asking him during that panel I was talking about, you know, what are some challenges? And they were talking about from the marketing standpoint, I didn't realize they have to like bid on trailer spots that play before movies where like they actually have to pay and put out like a bid to say, put my trailer in front of this movie. And that is crazy to me. Like if you want these smaller movies to have any chance of succeeding and you're making the marketing teams like pay to get that trailer in front of a movie that could actually help get that movie seen, like that seems insane to me. And so like, I can't even imagine how many little systems throughout Hollywood and theatrical and all these things that exist that would make my eyes open in surprise like that. It's just one of those little data points that goes to show you like, oh my God, this system is almost like built to help these things fail. you know, so
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's one of those little things, but like, you know, people want to see original stuff. And I feel like, you know, Universal and all these other studios can say, we are for the theatrical experience. Well, okay, well then help. Don't hold your hand down over these like smaller studios that are trying to get a $6 million movie scene. You know, that was just one weird factoid I didn't really have a good place for here, but just blew my mind that that's a way that that works.
Yeah, I had never heard that either. That's totally insane. All right, well, yeah, I think that'll do it for today's episode. You can find more about pretty much everything we talked about in some form or another at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.